Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Dealership Fix It podcast. You're listening to episode number 60, and I don't know what day it is almost, or what month. Here we sit in the middle of COVID-19, the coronavirus of 2020. A lot's changed. My last podcast was, looks like about a month ago, shockingly. And I've been busy homeschooling my kids and working. So, as you all know, I do this on the side, and I'm here to have great conversations with industry veterans, guys that really bring a lot of value to you in these conversations. And I got to chat with Kurt Von Ahnen again offline, and I asked him to come back on if he would. Been really pleased with the sort of conversations he and I have had and seeing what he's doing out there and the things he can do to help some dealers out. But great conversations, I think, I see him having, and I wanted to tap back into him for a perspective. So, Kurt, welcome back to the Dealership Fix It podcast.
Brian, I appreciate it. I do. I like adding value to your audience. And, you know, just a side note for you, when I actually do get to reach out and talk to dealers one-on-one, they've all, you know, it's not all, but most of them listen to your podcast and have really positive things to say. So I was super amped to get back with you and you know, kind of pick up where we left off.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. It's funny because I've never built this being, I just always thought of something that should exist. So I figured I would just do it. But I haven't kind of wrapped my existence to it, which is kind of why you see this gap, like a month, I get busy and a month goes by. I'm here to jump on with guys if it's something valuable. I'm not just trying to fill space in the air. And maybe if I were trying to build the brand a little better, I would do a better job with that. But I'm just trying to be here if it's can be relevant and good conversations for, you know, like I say, I picture myself at dealerships and other guys I've met through the years. So thank you for that. I'm glad to hear that that people know of the podcast. They don't have to know who I am or anything else, just as long as I'm bringing, you know, like I say, guys like yourself on and kind of get them thinking, get them moving. So what?
Well, you know, Brian, at this time, I mean, you mentioned COVID right at the beginning in your introduction. And for me, this COVID thing, this whole thing has just reeked of opportunity. And in fact, I wrote a blog post about it almost a month ago at this point that said, hey, anytime there's a disruption, you know, that disruption can be an obstacle or it can be an opportunity. It's in how you address it. And I started, you know, making content, you know, in that light and trying to follow some core examples of people that received this opportunity, you know, rather than an obstacle. And it's been interesting to see the outcome. And, you know, I would say that, you know, service leadership in a crisis is a big deal, not just for your employees, but, you know, in your community. And so it's been really interesting to watch this happen. This COVID thing is a horrible deal all the way around. You know, I feel bad for people that are sick. I can empathize with them. There's, you know, if you've got family that's sick, you know, this is not a statement, you know, against that or to say that, you know, I don't care about it. But man, we have made a great deal of sacrifice in this country for this incident. You know, more people die in car accidents, more people die from drunk driving, more people die from the regular flu. And so a lot of people are having a hard time dealing with this. And when it's your company, when it's your business that you voluntarily, you know, kind of shut down, that's hard to stomach. And so I wanted to find a way for businesses, especially in states where they're deemed essential, to find a way to find success through the muck. You know what I mean?
Yes. Well, I think you certainly, you know, sometimes the worst of times or the worst things a person or a family or in this case, a nation or world can go through. There are people who will, not to make it sound negative, but there are people who capitalize on the opportunity because they know there's always an opportunity. You know, obviously if it's batten down the hatches because your local government has told you will not be open and you will not do business, well, you know, you might have a timetable set up, I'm sure, and looking at that and maybe got a certain window of time where you say, I can come back or my business folds by then. But in the meantime, assuming I can come back in 30 days or, you know, whatever the governor or whoever is saying, in that time, you know, that's the conversations I've been having with my clients has been, Okay, so, you know, okay, so you're not closed. Oh, okay, so sales is closed, but service and parts are not. Okay, so what is, you know, you don't have to tell me your plan. Obviously, they've got a lot of planning they're doing, but if they're sharing with me what they have going on, I start thinking about all these processes and all these pieces, and these parts of the equation where they haven't been able to touch it and massage it because they've been just busy enough to not have to. And then, of course, to me, that's the opportunity has presented itself. You've got all the time in the world now. What do we work? What are we tackling first, and what's your plan?
Yeah. You know, it sounds like you and I are so much on the same page. For me personally, you know, almost one of my favorite phrases has become like friction point, right? So I try and think of like, think of your dealership, think of your business, whether it's, you know, power sports, marine base, it could be bicycles, right? Because there's a diverse crowd that listens to your content. I know that you're focused on power sports, but so much is applicable elsewhere. And how many people like going to the service department at your facility? You know, and then you start thinking, well, why do people not like coming to my service department? And you start looking at those friction points. Mm-hmm. And right now is a prime opportunity to be able to kind of re-script that experience, right? So from an objective standpoint, why don't people like coming to my store? Is it, you know, is it the parking lot? Is it the building appearance? Is there confusion as to, you know, where to take your product to get it serviced at my facility? You know, is it the people? Do I have the wrong guy on the service counter? Do I have the wrong people answering the phone? Do I have the wrong people, you know, bringing the motorcycle back up front to be redelivered to the customer for active delivery? You know, and this is a really good opportunity for these businesses to be introspective and go, hey, wait a minute, I do have some friction points that I can alter, I can fix, I can eliminate. And in the end, that might not create revenue this month, but it will expand the opportunity for revenue when they open back up. And so I think that's huge, you know. And then I hear all these success stories about curbside delivery, curbside drop-off, and all these things that people are implementing. That is, again, you know, it's trying to lower the friction point for the consumer, which I think is huge.
Yeah, it's, you know, as you're describing that in my brain, I think visually, right? So as you're saying friction point, I think about you've got this outside force and this inside force, the two, you know, a customer, the employee, let's call it, and the client or the customer, the two are trying to come and be in the same place and interact together, right? So is it a level of friction that just requires a little bit of high quality grease, you know, or a little lube on thing? Or does it require, okay, no, it actually requires a grinder to grind out some of the rough edges and then we'll polish, right? Or is it one of those where it's like, no, we got to scrap the whole mechanism as it is? So, you know, I just think back to the days where I worked at dealerships and did service writing, you know, and, you know, sometimes it's the guy, oh, he's supposed to go to the parts counter and that's where he checks his bike in for service. Well, how's that work? You know, I mean, not that a dealership has to change that, but I've worked at several that were set up that way, you know, kind of one size fits all. And, you know, I've also seen some that went that way and changed it through the busy times. Well, here's your opportunity. You know, how big a friction do you got going on and what level of change is required if you could rewrite it right now?
You know, and each of these businesses is different. They're not stamped. You know, when I used to do the in-person training with dealerships for other corporations, I would give them the excuse. I'd give them the out. You know, I'm like, I get it. You're not Home Depot. You're not, you know, every Home Depot is set up the same, right? One end of the building is, you know, where how you make a foundation. And the other end of the building is like gardening and landscaping. And then the store is assembled in the order that you build a house. So when you go to Home Depot, whatever Home Depot you go to, you can always find what you want because the store is set up in the same order. It's not the same when you go to a motorcycle dealership, right? Each of these businesses is an independent franchisee of some other brand or combination of brands. Uh-huh. And so, like you said, you know, as a service writer, maybe you greeted the customer, maybe you didn't. When the customer came to get the motorcycle, maybe they pay the service writer, maybe they pay the parts counter, maybe they pay a cashier that works for both service and the parts counter. But the customer doesn't know that and doesn't have a familiarity with the business, you know, their first or even second visit there. And so that causes some of that friction, that causes some of that uneasiness that the customer has with us.
Do you imagine, I like to think of, you know, if we're talking about leadership, do you think that enough people that are the leader of an organization, let's call it the dealership owners and management, are they preparing for a lot of these scenarios that are about to start taking place, right? So you got, you know, depending on where you're at and what the laws and orders require or don't allow, does leadership, are they having conversations with everybody in there? Are they gathering them all together to have these great conversations and say, hey, just so you know, here's what we're doing. Social distancing, right? That's in the general sort of, terminology. But if a customer walks in and they're totally not on the same page, how does your staff react? I'll give you an example. I went and bought from Ace Hardware in town over here. I needed a wheelbarrow because I got this gravel and I'm doing some stuff outside. And this is what I'm doing when I'm not teaching my kids from home and actually doing work during the daytime, you know, so the evening hours as we start to go into the later day, that's what I'm doing. So I went and bought myself a wheelbarrow. I hadn't had one in years. And I walk into this Ace Hardware and this retired guy comes trucking up. How can I help you, sir? And he walks right up. I mean, the guy's like a foot and a half from me. I'm immediately thinking like, well, I'm not uncomfortable because to me, it's like, if he's not, I'm not wearing a mask. He's not wearing a mask. He walks right up next to me. I took kind of a little bit of a sidestep and leaned on one of the shelves to be like, hey, I'm looking for a wheelbarrow and some whatever, you know? But I immediately thought, wow, okay. So this guy, just if I were a sensitive person and I saw people walking out with masks on, so either they're sensitive or they're sensitive, you know, in their idea of what they think they could put on someone else, right? But I started thinking, wow, there's all this perception that we're in this big soup of random mixture of perceptions. You know, is a leader training their staff on how to react to somebody who doesn't kind of play ball? And you don't want to be like, hey, mister, back up. You know, if your customer comes and gets into your space. I just wonder if you feel like that's something that is being focused on, or is that part of, I mean, obviously the small, very granular end of it, but. Are those the sort
of things? No. And you hit so many things on the head with just your simple story there, Brian, and the question. And I'm going to say resoundingly, no, they're not disseminating information down through the ranks. And that's what the customer is experiencing, you know, not just at Ace Hardware, but, you know, at a lot of these different facilities. There are guidelines that get put out by a local municipality, right? This is how, you know, if your business is deemed essential, these are some of the things you'll have to put in place. And in a lot of cases, upper management, you know, CEOs, CFOs, HR representatives, I mean, you can go through, you know, whatever the size of the business is we're talking about, that person will say, okay, well, I'm going to print out this memo from the municipality and I'm going to give it to, you know, could be the leads, right? I'm going to give it to the shift lead that's over these 12 people. And they say, well, here's a copy of it. Make sure everybody reads this and initials it, right? And it's going to be by the time clock. And people will just glance at it and initial it because they want to get to their next shift. People aren't experiencing leadership in the way that I define leadership. Sharing copies of memos and saying, initial this, you're responsible to know it now. That's not leadership to me. Leadership is, you know, taking the time to walk amongst your people, you know, maybe show them leadership by leading the way first, and then, you know, walk with them in their shoes for a little bit. And in some cases, you got to get behind them, you know, and give them a little shove sometimes to find success, and then get next to them again, you know, take their temperature, see how they're doing, right? Kind of monitor and see how they're growing or how they're accepting whatever the new standard is, and then go back to what you perceive as leadership, right? Go back to your office and catch up on the things that you need to do. But leadership in today's day and age isn't the same as management. And I think that's where I think there's a disconnect, is that especially in power sports, people that, you know, own dealerships generally they might be great salespeople, or they might be super enthusiasts, or they might be, there's all these things where we say, oh, they're really great at this and great at that. But when it comes to leading people and growing a business, a lot of them didn't have formal training in that. And so it's not that they don't know, or it's not that they're idiots, they're not stupid. They're usually very, very smart people. They just don't have direct experience or exposure to leadership techniques and understanding how people work. And so that's why we see a lot of these gaps on sales floors and service departments and parts departments.
Is that it?
I answered that kind of long.
No,
I'm sorry.
No, you should. I hate to talk too much. A lot of times I want to kind of relay what I'm thinking or what my brain's kind of molding around a situation or scenario. But I like for, you know, you or my guest to definitely go on at length if possible. Do you feel like then it's got to do with the difference between what was that? You know, it was like a big YouTube thing for a while back, and it was the old, like, the college professor's up there, and he's like, you know, how much sand can I put in this thing? You know, that whole thing, my company's been using it lately too. It's, you know, been resurrected.
Yeah, that's
with
the rocks and the golf balls and the marbles, yes, and then the sand and then the water. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah,
I mean,
I've seen that before too.
Is that part of, I mean, not to beat that horse well into oblivion, but do you feel like is the leadership, you know, we're seeing in this business, does it need to lean a certain way or the other? Do they need to, are they not doing big rocks first? Are they, because to me, right, I'm a nuanced guy. Maybe that wouldn't make me a great leader because I wouldn't focus on the rocks well enough. And maybe that's something that, you know, somebody listening to this could say, oh yeah, I'm totally like him. I get lost in all the nuance of, hey, did everybody understand? Hey, I want to bounce here's the governor's order. Here's what this means. Here's what social distancing means. Here's what we're expected to do. Let's talk it out, right? That's where I would go with staff, but that may leave me in a place where I'm focusing on the granular stuff and I'm not focusing on the big boulders and rocks and golf balls.
Yeah, it's definitely a difficult balance. But you know, a lot of what you said, like what you were talking about, the rocks and the golf balls and the marbles and the sand and the water and the jar thing. And what I say a lot with, especially business owners, is I'll say, you know, have you ever seen the show Hoarders before? You know, and they'll be like, Hoarders. I'm like, yeah, you know, with people, you know, they get a nice house and then, you know, it seems like overnight, but it's not overnight. It's over time. These people begin to have just junk everywhere. And some of them die in a pile of their own trash. Right. Now, was that the goal? Is that where they wanted to go? Obviously, the answer is no. Like, nobody says, this is my plan. I'm going to buy a new house and turn it into, you know, a living dump. But unfortunately, that can happen in a business where you see changes happening. And remember, the human being is incredibly adaptive, right? And it's meant to be a good thing, but it can be a curse instead of a blessing. We adapt to things and we consider them normal. And so these owners of businesses will think that their people are at a certain level or a certain intellectual understanding or a certain relational understanding with the public that they're simply not at. Often when I get called for consulting, the ownership of the dealership is assuming that I'm going to come in as a consultant and I'm going to help them raise their gross profit from, you know, 8% to 11%, or I'm going to, and they start getting into the nitty gritty of numbers and spreadsheets and things that might look a little bit more like their Spader training if they're in a Spader 20 group. But then I go to do a visit or I talk to their service writers or managers, you know, through a Zoom call or through an in-person visit. And I realize, holy crud, this person doesn't really understand how to use the phone as an effective sales tool yet. And as you know, being a service writer, you can make a lot of your sales on the phone. And so it's like, well, wait a minute, you know, we need to get back to the basics. And it's part of that hoarder's mentality, right? We have accepted the current norm as being okay, as being in the norm, and thinking that that's what we get. And it's not. We can make that change. We can clean the house and we can start over. Uh-huh.
I feel like you and I've talked about this before, and I don't know if it was on the last time we were on or just offline, but you know, the opportunity, you know, on the service end of the house, especially that exists, you know, now that, you know, not everybody wants to jump in the car at the moment and drive to your dealership, and they're willing to do more and more online. Expectations have grown on what that can do, or like this, you know, communicating via phone or, you know, video messaging sort of setup. And automotive, I think, has been doing that for a whole lot longer. And power sports has been resistant, I think, to leaning to it. Is this going to be the time that all has to shift and the in-person has to, you know, will potentially be secondary to all the communication that'll be had in these other methods?
Well, I look forward to it changing, to be honest with you, Brian. I think that now is the perfect time for a transition. We could take any of our business practices right now with the COVID crisis and just change it. We could say, okay, well, now we're going to go this direction. And, you know, the circumstance, the topsy-turviness of what we're working in right now, like I'm making up words right there, but the topsy-turviness of what we're dealing with right now allows us to change whatever we want and then set that as a new norm, or to move forward for the next 30 or 60 days, you know, and then evaluate it as leaders and go, this was a good direction. We saw some growth this way. Or, hey, that's unfortunate. We thought it would be a good idea, but it didn't work out. Let's go a different direction. But now's the time where we could make some changes and be, you know, and show some leadership in that direction.
So that would imply to me that if somebody's maybe good at adapting and they're good at kind of going with the flow and making the best of what they get, at this point, it might be a time to draw the line in the sand, right? And say, get out the drafting paper and board and your fancy mechanical pencil, and let's, you know, make sure you draft out your plans and goals and what you want versus go with the flow and get what you get and make the best of it, right? Make that shift. Might be a perfect time for that.
Well, exactly. You know, a leader that is comfortable with change, a leader that's comfortable with communication, I think this is huge. It's not just people that are willing to make changes that are going to succeed, because making the change might alienate people. Some people hate change, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're comfortable with change, you also need to be comfortable with communication and connection, right? Like, it's one thing to communicate and throw, you know, some information on social or to send out a mass email or something, but it's a different matter to make sure that that communication connects. And so, you know, by leveraging relationship with customers, by leveraging relationships with, you know, partnering type businesses in the area, in your region, you can have a lot more positive effect. And so I've been trying to work with dealers to say, hey, those of you that are okay with change, let's institute some change. Let's discuss what change looks like, you know, for your business. And then let's discuss how we're going to communicate those changes and leverage relationships with others to have a positive effect. And then how are we going to measure that positive effect over the next 30, 60, 90 days to make sure we're going in the right direction? And it's been interesting because some people are actually experiencing growth right now, you know, during the quarantine. They've got more service work than they've had in the past. I talked to a shop last week. They're on a 3-week wait already to get into their shop and get something worked on. So now that brings up the second part of my training, which is like, okay, once your business increases, how are you going to increase your productivity and effectiveness to get the work done more quickly, right? Does it mean hiring more people? Does it mean modifying your techniques behind the scenes? And that's a whole different discussion. But it's been interesting to see that people that focus on communication and connection are seeing growth, whereas people that are calling up and say, you know, there's the scarcity mindset and there's the abundance mindset, right? So if you're a general manager and you've got a 2-year-old Ninja 300 on the floor that you're paying floor plan on, you might be telling your salespeople, hey, you're going to go through this name list and you're going to call all of our previous customers until somebody buys that Ninja 300. That thing's got to go this weekend. You know, that's a scarcity mindset. Whereas calling existing customers and saying, hey, I know it's been a while since you've been in, you know, we want to let you know that A, we're open. If you need anything, our service department is open, our sales department's open, our parts department's open, whatever that scenario is. But, you know, you call them and you say, hey, we just want to make sure, are you guys okay? You know, do you know anyone that's sick? Is anyone in your family sick? You know, if you're a person of faith, you might say, is it okay if I pray for you or whatever? But that relationship, right? And it's just maintaining or building that relationship. And if the people, if the community feels that connection and they know you're open, well, then you may experience a growth in sales, which is what's been happening at some of the folks that have leveraged relationships that work with me.
Yeah, I mean, front of mind, it's pretty simple concept, right? If, you know, if you're so far out of front of mind that you're not in mind, you might be the local shop to somebody, but, you know, maybe they're shopping and maybe they've gone off that sort of that down that rabbit hole of a different brand and they're looking at your competitor's site. I was going to, as you were saying that, it got me thinking, you know, I'm constantly in and out of with Cycle Trader and RV Trader and the parts that I do there. I'm constantly looking at dealers' listings on Trader. I'm looking at their portal, the back end. We call it Trader Track. So I'm looking at that for all the stats that are in it, you know, and to see what stands out at me as positives and red flags, you know, negatives. That, you know, okay, is this something that's, did something come disconnected in our technology and it's not doing something right? What I tend to do though a lot of times is I'll go to the listings through the portal, and I can click through and make sure, okay, is this directly connecting as it should, kind of VDP to VDP means, you know, our ad detail page to theirs on their page, if that exists. But what I tend to find here in this last month that stood out to me quite a bit is maybe a lack of communication. And again, that sort of front of mind and maybe putting people at ease, right? So I'm picturing myself as a customer clicking through, and I go over to their website. And if, you know, let's say I just land on their main page of their website and there's zero mention about what the heck is going on right now. You know, the old, like, yeah, don't mention it because it's not something good to talk about. You know, as I look at it, I'm kind of shaking my head like, okay. So I need to let these guys know, hey, have you thought about or why aren't you, you know, discussing that elephant in the room? You know, there's a big elephant. And if somebody lands on your page and there's zero conversation about, you know, oh, here's a separate page within our website, or here's a little banner that comes up right at entry point of your site, because there's, you know, guys like me who walk around, you know, I don't walk around, it's been hiding in the house a whole lot, but when I go to the grocery store, when I go to the hardware store, I did not wear a mask. I'm being as smart as I can. I'm not wearing a mask. That's me. And then you've got all these other folks that I see with masks, and probably a lot of people who are thinking, man, I really would love to go do that. What a great escape mechanism for all of this shut-in we've been having, to go ride a motorcycle, to go grab an RV and go camping, to grab a boat and go hit the waterways that just opened up or whatever. But some of those folks, by the time they go and look, like, you know, if they're in sort of the more fear mindset, they may not go any further. They may say, oh, this person doesn't even reference this exists. I don't know what they would probably try to shake my hand and give me a hug when I walked in there. No thanks. What do you think about that? Are you seeing that yourself?
Well, one of the best examples that I saw, and is it okay to mention a dealer specifically on your show?
Sure.
Okay. One of the best examples that I saw right when the COVID crisis broke out was Scott Cloninger leveraged the email list at Triumph of Albuquerque. You know, and I live in Southern California now, right? But I still get their emails, and it was very direct. We're still open. This is what we've done. We've cleaned, we've sterilized, we're enforcing social distancing, no more than 6 people allowed in the showroom at a time, you know, bam, bam, bam. Like, this is how we're going to do business. And to me, it just jumped off the page. And this was right at the beginning of the crisis. So when I saw that, I was like, this is exactly what I wrote my blog post about. This is an actionable example of what I wrote. Yeah, connection, you know, communicate, connect, and invite people to come. And don't pressure them to come in. It wasn't like, you know, now during the COVID crisis, today and today only, you're going to get 20% off. It wasn't cheesy like that. It was, hey, if you're looking, social distancing is now cool, right? When they said that you could ride a motorcycle during the crisis, I thought to myself, wow, how many trapped people in their homes, male or female, would love to just get out and go for a motorcycle ride right now? Like, now you want to do something by yourself more than ever. Mm-hmm. And social distancing is now cool again. It's like, we might actually see an upswing. You know, the COVID crisis might actually launch the motorcycle business, you know, early this year. And it's like, if you look at it from that perspective, it's like, oh, wow, okay. Now let people know how to do business, what to expect. And I think they nailed it on the head. And that was, you know, I'm going to say that was over a month ago that I got that email at this point. But I thought that was a great way to react.
Well, I totally agree. And I can relate because, you know, I'm in the house. My wife's working from home. We're both trying to help. We have, you know, little kids in elementary school that we're trying to keep from getting too much screen time, that we're sitting there showing them how to click and do their homework on the damn computer. So it becomes an all-day proposition for 4 of us, and then keeping the kids who get too much screen time from going at it. So I can tell you, and I can relate, that what I do is find the window where I say, hey, I got everybody lunch figured out. Hey, you mind if I go for a ride real quick? Go out and get on my motorcycle, and I'm gone for 45 minutes to an hour, drop of a hat, just to be out. And man, I can tell you, it's never felt so good. So if your thing is going out in the RV and getting out in your friend's property, you know, your friend has a farm, and you say, hey, can I go over in the corner of that lot right there and put my RV up for a few days or a week? And, you know, I don't know. And same with obviously all these other industries, and what sort of your favorite, you know, thing to do is, it's, I agree. And I've seen, you know, and what I look at here in my territory where I sit, I'm in Oregon and Washington, and Washington right now cannot sell a motor vehicle. I don't know about cars if they're allowing that yet, but right now power sports dealers there cannot, an RV, they cannot sell a unit. Service and sales are I'm hoping are busy, but I can tell you that the dealers on the other side of the river here in Oregon are really busy because they can sell. So of course there's that sort of that built up, pent up demand, and it's spilling over. So I think, a lot of that is going on right now as we speak.
And Brian, there's so many ways that a dealer, let's say you are in Washington and you're not allowed to sell motorcycles right now. Okay. I totally get that. And there's rules. I read somewhere in Washington where you're only allowed to have like one person in the building and they can only be there during the duration of a sale. This is for automotive. And they can only be in there during the duration of the sale. And it, the customer has to prove that they're replacing a totaled vehicle or something. Like it's a replacement vehicle, not just buying a vehicle.
Yes.
And so I'm like, okay, so let's, so in my line of work, I'm going, well, let's assume that the Washington dealers are out. Cause I'm like, okay, they're out for now, but they're not out for now. Right. And that's where I talk about leadership in a crisis. Like right now, if you're a dealer owner or a dealer general manager and you're faced with, what am I going to do with my staff? Like, I don't want to lose them, right? Because here's the worst thing that can happen to our industry. We alienate our employees, and after sending them home on furlough or laying them off, they leave, right? And we're already at a deficit for qualified people in our industry to work with our customers.
Right.
So if we lose these people and then all of a sudden the quarantine gets lifted, and the business can open and employees don't show up. If you are going into the heat of the season where it may be busy and you have no skilled staff on hand, that is probably the worst thing that can happen to our industry, you know, this year, right? It's like, imagine we can reopen, but now there's no one to serve the clients.
Which is a big stack of pent up demand. It'll come flooding in.
Yeah.
Based on what I'm seeing. Yes.
Yeah. And the cost of onboarding new employees. These small businesses can't deal with, you know, all of the HR and insurance and, you know, bringing people in and training them. And, you know, we would find a lot of mom and pop shops would find it easier just to close the business than to start over. And so, you know, this, we're setting ourselves up for something negative. But if we take a leadership stance and we go, wait a minute, you know, like I was just talking about customer communication, right? I was talking about like we make an assumption that our employees are at a certain level that they're not. Well, whether they take training through Manyama no Mas or they do training with Spader or with Garage Composites or any of these other groups, you know, let's invest in our people. Let's show our people that we're willing to make an investment in them, right? It might not be a steady paycheck. It might be a reduced check. But if we say, hey, I've got, you know, I'm going to cover your lynda.com training, which is probably the cheapest form of training you could get for professional development, right? I want you to learn, you know, how to work better with spreadsheets. I want you to learn how to work better with sales communication. I want you to learn how to work better with CRM tools. I mean, now's the time where we can really develop these people, right? And find a way to keep them employed, to keep them, you know, gaining an income while we're investing in them. And if people see us as leaders of an industry, you know, kind of stretching the rules and finding ways to keep people employed and invest in them at this trying time, we'll earn, again, more of that relationship and more of that loyalty moving forward, which when the quarantine lifts is only going to help our business.
And you had mentioned on there, lynda.com, which I know I heard of, but I just looked it up so I could reference it again in case somebody thinks they have to back up and listen to it again. It's lynda.com, Lynda with a Y.com. And it looks like, is it part of LinkedIn? Is that what it is?
Yeah. LinkedIn got involved, I'm going to say a year or two ago with Lynda and took it over. I think they bought it.
Okay.
And I've used it commercially with other clients. Like in my learning management system, I have 14 courses, right? In lynda.com, they have, you know, hundreds or thousands of courses and very specific. And so it's a great tool corporately to use with people to say, oh, do you need help with, you know, how Microsoft Access works? Do you need help with, you know, you pick it and there's a course in there to help you with it. And so it's a really good way to invest in your people.
Oh, sweet.
And it shows them, and it's, go ahead.
I was just going to say, sweet, I just noticed there's a photography course, so all the dealers can have lots of photos now.
Oh, dude, it like I said, it covers everything. And so it's one of those things where now, when I talk to dealers that, you know, haven't spoken to me yet, right? Like, so we're well into the COVID crisis, right? And I'm still reaching out and still hooking up with dealers that I haven't spoken with previously about training and about helping them. And I refuse to be one of those used car salesman types during the crisis and like trying to be real pushy. I just try to offer value, offer some advice. And if they want more, there's plenty more where that came from. And when I'm talking to them, I'll say, well, how are you keeping your people busy now? Like if your business is closed, and some of them are, right? How can you leverage your staff using social distancing and being safe and keeping the place clean? How can you leverage them to do work for you that will make you relaunch from a more successful standpoint? And I go, you know, what does your showroom look like? If it's a line of motorcycles, you know, four different brands parked all side to side to side to side, pull all the bikes outside, you know, detail clean the whole showroom from one side to the other, maybe paint a wall, put in some new ceiling tiles, whatever it is you got to do to dress up your, you know, some people that go from incandescent lights to LED lights in their showroom see an amazing difference just in that presentation. And then when you put the bikes back in, don't put them, you know, in a boring lineup, put them in like semi-circular groups of like adventure bikes, sport bikes, dual purpose bikes, you know, dirt bikes, motocross, ATVs, UTVs, group them and then take accessories and accessorize the displays so that you are already building, you know, that messaging, that symbolic messaging of bundling your sales. And when you reopen, you can say, welcome to our grand reopening. We've redone our showroom and, you know, we want to give people an experience and, you know, train your salespeople on how to deal with this new, you know, point of purchase display system. You know, implement a pit stop sales strategy that takes people from sales through F&I, through parts, and then delivery through service. Because when the quarantine lifts, again, you'll be in that position to take a look at all those friction points or all of those missing elements of the sale and rebuild the sales experience and launch that as, you know, a new relaunch. You can change your entire business strategy. And from the service perspective, because I know that this call is about fix stops and not necessarily sales, you know, when's the last time you pulled everything out of the shop and you cleaned it from wall to wall and you made the technicians throw away all that crap they save under their workbench, right? All those extra parts where they save it and go, oh, I might need this next year. No. It goes in the dumpster or it goes to your own storage space. But, you know, this workspace needs to be clean. And then clean the whole place, put in some LED lights, you know, re-epoxy the floor. And that will make your staff so much more happier and productive when time comes to get busy again, you know, because whether a technician admits it or not, he loves a clean, well-lit workspace and it makes them more productive and more efficient, which raises your profit. But now's the time to do it. Cause if you're closed, what other time? You always said you couldn't do it cause you were too busy. Well, now you're not.
Well, it seems like, you know, if I were to kind of think about who that would resonate best with, I imagine, you know, if you've got your ultimate like type A, very organized, they do this stuff anyway, that's not really who we're talking to, right? We're talking to the ones who either right now, for maybe not even their own fault, but because of the question marks on the timing of all this, right? Like, oh, can I even be in the store? Is it like closed down? They turned my water off because I can't even go in there. Like there's obviously these variables, but maybe the folks who maybe their mentality has been, when my back's against the wall, when they tell me when go time is, and they tell me a week out, then I'm going to have, we're going to do all this, right? So it's probably those kind of guys that I think this really should hit home to. Take the time now, because, you know, we're not guaranteed you're going to have a 2 weeks notice on when you can open, and then you're, okay, flip the switch, let's go start doing all this. You know, it's
dude, they opened manufacturing facilities in Italy yesterday.
Mm-hmm. I saw, you know,
Ducati's too. Back to work. Yeah, Ducati's back to work. MB Agusta's back to work. Brembo Brakes is back to work. And there wasn't like they had 3 weeks to prepare for it. It was like all of a sudden they're like, hey, I guess we can open on Monday. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's kind of what we're going to see. I think, you know, municipalities are going to kind of just make some rules and go, okay, well, I guess we can open this up now. And you're going to go, oh, crud, that's up. You know, and you want to be prepared. You want to be ready to communicate and connect with your customers as they begin to come back into your shop.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if I already told you this, but today's the 28th of April. I, on the 7th of April, went to one of my area dealerships that I do business with and I've done business with for a long time. And they happen to be a franchised brand that of the motorcycle I have in the garage, right? Well, it's been having a battery issue. The bike's less than a year old and I haven't ridden it a whole lot. So I'm thinking, oh, it needs a new battery, but maybe they could load test it for me. Maybe at the same time, they could check the VIN and see if I've got any sort of recalls, any sort of updates, anything needed that way. And there's something else I'd like them to kind of look at. Well, I have no time expectations, right? I'd love to have the bike here all the time. So when it's sunny and I need a break, I can go take off on it. But I sent through the dealer's website, I submitted a service lead, like a Joe Schmo, right? I could probably make a phone call. Hey, it's Brian, Cycle Trader. Oh, hey, Brian, you know, like I could do that. I didn't. Yeah. I just plugged in. I used my personal email address, plugged it all in, gave my VIN, gave the whole nine yards, what I was thinking and the body of it, hit go. It bounced back an immediate, you know, hey, thanks. We got your request. We'll be contacting you shortly. One of those sort of things. Here it is 21 days later, and I've not gotten any word from the dealer. So don't be that guy right now.
No. And here's the thing where I want to make sure that I say out loud and that everybody hears it loud and clear. It is not unusual to have things go cattywampus and to feel overwhelmed or not be sure what the next step is. Or so like, if you're listening to things I say, and I ramble off a bunch of stuff, I talk fast and you're just sitting there going, oh yeah, this guy's full of it. You know, I'd like to see what he do in the real world. I'd like to see what he do in my shop. You know, please don't be insulted. Don't be upset. Just go, hey, you know what? If you want, hit me up on Facebook, LinkedIn, whatever. Let's have a discussion. And, you know, any project, anything that is worth doing takes effort and takes work. And one of the first steps is to go, okay, where are you at now? Where do you want to be? And let's just break this thing into some pieces that are digestible. And once we do that, I find that people are a lot more, they're a lot more apt to take action, right? Because once you make it less overwhelming, then you go, okay, well, that makes sense. That's doable. I can do that. Where I've had a lot of people go, oh, dude, you know, you don't know my customers that well. You know, you think if I clean the shop or put LED lights in, it's going to increase business. You know, you couldn't be further from the truth. And I'm like, well, I don't know. When's the last time you cleaned the shop and hung LED lights to test me? Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many opportunities that'll help us drive business and productivity and efficiency up that, you know, at the end of the day, it's all about adding value to the dealer and to the customers and improving customer perception and dealer profit, right? And that profit only comes through productivity, efficiency, right? So the more that we can do to make it, you know, a happy team, a healthy team, and people that enjoy working and being productive, the more we can do that, you know, and obviously communication at the service counter is imperative to make sure the customers are actually coming in and agreeing to get the work done. But if we can make it a happy environment for the technicians, well, your profits are bound to go up.
Would you, if I were to say, could you give me, and you just gave me some, which is what made me think of it, you know, to dealers in general, you know, do these two or three things. You know, these should be your action steps today if you're not already working on these. You know, if you need help figuring out why these are important and so on, then reach out to Kurt. But what would you say to somebody just in a general way to say, here's three things you ought to be doing right now?
You know, Brian, the question comes to me often. And the answer sounds like a non-answer. It really does. But I have to be realistic. My focal point, and remember, all these different trainers and companies all have a different focal point. Mine's communication. Mine is how to get over that gap at the service counter. And so if your service writer doesn't have any formal training in communication, even if you as the business owner, if you're the general manager and you're listening to this right now, you're going, oh, I know how to do that. You knowing how to do it, and you taking the time to work side by side with your service writer to impart those qualities, right? So then you need to bring in someone to work with your service writer and get that counter up to speed as far as communication and processing and a dispatch process, you know, kind of overseeing the shop. That's super huge. I think, you know, 80, 90% of the lost opportunities that come through a dealership in general are through that service counter. And they could be the most likable person on the planet, but if they don't understand, you know, the theories of dispatching work in terms of productivity and efficiency, well, then they're not going to make any money. And so that's huge. And then the non-answer part of my answer is, you got to get in touch with, pick a percentage, the top 5%, the top 10% of your repeat customers, right? And then just survey them, ask them, call them from a relationship standpoint and say, what are the top two or three friction points that you see in my business from a customer standpoint, right? Because you can guess all day long, but until you actually ask, you know, your repeat customers, hey, what were the biggest friction points for you to become a customer of our dealership? And give that customer kind of a vested interest in changes you might want to make to that, that buying experience. Then you can execute, right? Then you can say, okay, well, it turns out my parking lot's hard to get into. Okay, well, how can I restructure that? Can I, is it signage? Is it paint? Is it new blacktop? Is it, you know, but try and get creative and figure out how can I meet the customer's need? And then from there, you know, you just build on it. You try and reduce friction points one at a time. You train your staff to interact and communicate better. And if you can fix that Achilles heel at the service counter, you will see unbelievable gains through the rest of your shop. And that extends not just in service, but remember, service is the best customer to your parts department, right? So if you have a substantial increase in service, you're going to have a substantial increase in parts. And when all that begins to happen, when everything starts to fire on all cylinders, your service management team is going to have to communicate better with your sales management team to meet the sales needs as far as pre-planning units for the floor, pre-planning reconditioning of trade-ins and all that kind of stuff. And once that starts to work, once that really becomes a cohesive unit, dude, it's unbelievable what a shop can produce or the amount of profit and professionalism that a shop can exude once that happens from the service counter.
Well, it's a, and part of, you know, touching on just part of what you said, you know, you've got service, the service department. Well, it's right in the name, what you're supposed to do, right? You're supposed to be serving the needs. And if you're not determining how you did, you know, through that, like you're saying, afterward communication, surveys, phone calls, whatever it is, with either some of your best or some of your most recent to see how you fall versus your own expectations. Yeah, how can you even know if you're close to hitting the mark on servicing and serving?
So many things you can make an assumption on, but until you actually ask people. So when I made the fixed operations course for my website to train dealers, you know, I couldn't actively sell that course because I was working for another OEM at the time. That would have been a conflict of interest. So I built what I thought would be the best net, you know, to cast, to try and catch dealers for their attention. But when I started a Facebook-centered page for fixed operations, I point blank asked the people that joined that page, you know, without going to my website, without being a member of the online training that I already have, what do you think is the most important thing to train dealers on from a service perspective? And, you know, thankfully for me, the answer came back that it was, you know, service writer communication and, you know, customer interaction and things that I had focused on. But I had to be super open to the idea. Like I really thought they were going to say, man, we really need some ADP training. You know, we really need to know how Lightspeed actually works. We need to know how to make custom reports in software. And so I was expecting those types of questions. I was expecting something completely different than what I already had. But, you know, by going to the source, by going to the dealers and surveying them, I was able to say, okay, well, this is what you actually want training in. Well, then this is what I'm going to develop even further, which is why I made the course on how to use the phone properly as a sales tool. And it sounds like a simple course, but then again, go to a dealership and listen to service writers on the phone and you'll go, okay, that guy really needs a course on how to use the phone properly as a sales tool. That's what I made next.
It's tough, you know, when you've been to the level of discerning that obviously you are and helping guys, you know, get there, I'm sure it's gotta be tough to go in and, well, a good opportunity, you know, for those other dealers who aren't quite there. Cause yeah. As you'd said, it's tough. It can be really challenging right now to get good employees, to get employees, first of all, to want to do this, right?
Yeah.
Probably a lot of people love it, but when it's work, it's a different program. And when you're running it like a business and you expect it to be successful and hitting it out of the park with every client interaction, it, you know, it's a different program. So.
Yeah. The thing that's the most interesting about working with the dealers, and I alluded to this earlier, but it'll be, sometimes the hardest dealerships for me to work with are the really talented owners and general managers, because they're operating at a high level, right? And so they make an assumption that their staff has that level built in. And that's kind of the hard part. They're like, well, why do I have to hire you to train my staff when I already know all this stuff? And then I'm like, well, when's the last time you walked side by side with your staff and imparted that knowledge to them? And they're like, oh, I'm like, that's why you need me, right? So even when the leadership is on point, as far as their own personal skill set, if they don't have the time, the commitment, or the opportunity to work side by side with their staff, they won't see those benefits. And that can be really, really frustrating to a business owner, because now they're going to their 20 group meeting and they're going, I just don't get it. You know, I'm here with you guys. I'm having these conversations. We're looking at our numbers and my team's just not performing, even though I already know all this stuff. And it's like, well, it's okay if you know it, but you have to make sure that your staff, you know, is brought up in a culture that understands that too. And that can be really difficult because running a dealership is hard. You don't have, you know, unlimited time.
Well, and you get pulled in almost unlimited directions, I imagine, really, from the guys I
worked
with.
Yeah. Yeah. Every customer wants to be your best friend when they want that best deal, right? And so you don't get the time to walk back to, you know, check with the parts guy receiving parts and make sure he's using best practices and stocking parts in a way that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, or front loading service with the tools, with the parts and tools that they need for the next special job coming in. And so it's, unless you have somebody on the ground that's actively working with your staff, it can be really, really tough to get them to that level.
Where would you like to send folks to check you out and check out Mañana No Más?
Well, mañananomás.com is my main website, and I have the Academy link to that. And so when they go to the top menu, they'll see a link for Academy. And, you know, in there is a list of courses. There's also a list of memberships. And I have a fixed operations membership where I've gathered certain courses for service writers. And what's funny is I even have a course in there about like maintaining weight loss. And people say, why do you have a course about weight loss in a fixed operations course? That's stupid. And my answer to that is it's not stupid. You can only perform as good as your body will let you. So let's say you nail down, you know, how to use the phone as a sales tool. You nail down how to dispatch work. You nail down all this other stuff, but you're 380 pounds and you struggle to get your leg over a motorcycle at the dealership. Well, then the next level to be the best service writer you can be is to get your physical shape in order, you know, to deal with what you do mentally. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's a really well-rounded course in there. And a lot of it deals with, you know, personal development and communication. And that's where I think we need to focus.
So that's mañananomás.com.
Right? Mañananomás.com. Yeah. And for people that are like, man, I don't want to take any courses, but they want to make, like, they want to connect to other service writers, other service professionals. I have a free Facebook page. It's called Power Sports Marine Service Network. So if you go to Facebook and you type in Power Sports Marine Service Network, there's a Facebook page there. It's free. You know, there's no membership. And it's an open page at this point. I think we've only got something like 40 or 50 members in the page so far. But it's a great place to, you know, I'll share some articles in there. I share some live videos, maybe some advice, but it's a really good opportunity for other service writers and managers to connect and communicate too, because peer-to-peer learning is really important.
Well, absolutely. And that sort of very nuanced sort of, I only want to have the conversation at a certain level. I don't want to, you know, have something else popping up a notification for me on sales when I'm in the service part of the house. You know, that's you know,
yeah,
people
yeah,
more discerning for that.
Very service focused. And then, you know, if people decide they want to make a commitment for ongoing training or, you know, be part of the biweekly support calls that I do that are live, when they become part of the Mañana No Más family, they get access to social learning, which gives them access to every student within my network. And so they can, it's like a Facebook inside of a private page. It's like Facebook, but without the trolls, right? They can communicate with other service writers, other service managers, the diet stuff they're pursuing. There's diet courses that they can interact with other students. And then that peer-to-peer community thing really begins to take over, which is kind of nice. It's not all dependent upon me. The best part about being me is I realize I'm usually not the smartest guy in the room. I'm just the one that's, you know, more bold and open to talk about it. So by hooking people up with other folks, sometimes I find that can be the best source of information for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, and another way to move those rocks and marbles and whatever else we were talking about earlier, all the different levels of granular or course size, right? If you can reorganize your time a little bit more, cut out a couple of the, like you had said, the Facebook troll sites, and get on with Kurt's separate group, and you know, get it through his page or search it as he had mentioned. Just another way to maybe better organize your time to focus on what the shift you're wanting to make. So,
yeah.
Well, I appreciate you jumping on. I've had you tonight for almost an hour, and I know that your time's important, and I won't keep you on any longer. But I do encourage anybody listening, go check out Mañana No Más. You can find it on Facebook. You can Google it. It'll pop up right at the top. That's how I had to do it, because I always try to remember the site, and Google always reminds me what it was. But feel free to reach out to Kurt. Connect with him on LinkedIn. Kurt, thanks for coming on.
No worries, man. Like I said, I consider it an honor, and I know you're highly regarded out there, so it's nice to stay in touch.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. We'll have you back on again soon, and hopefully by then, the COVID stuff will be at least mostly in the rearview mirror. That's what I'm going to cross my fingers and say a little prayer about, and we can talk about the opportunity that exists at that time.
Wouldn't it be awesome if there was a resurgence in power sports and we could actually reminisce about how we predicted that?
Yes. pent up demand and what it caused people to do. Saw that a mile away.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Well, Kurt, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you. You have a good one.
Too.